Hi, my name is Jayton Shaw. I am associate professor in the Department of Lymphoma and Myeloma at the MD Anderson Cancer Center in Houston, Texas. It's a pleasure today to be with you. I'm really going to focus on relapsed refractory myeloma, navigating the treatment pathways and the multiple treatment options we have in relapsed refractory myeloma. As you know, the history of myeloma has been rapid evolution over the last 10 to 15 years. And this slide really highlights here the rapid advances that we've seen with the approval of multiple new drugs over the last 15 years, starting with bortezomib and lenalidomide in 2002, more recently carfilzomib in 2012, as well as pomalidomide in 2013, and more recently in 2015, four new approvals with panobinostat, ixazomib, daratumumab, and elotuzumab, all for relapsed refractory myeloma. And today we'll go over much of the data over the last year in the phase three setting, managing how we will manage relapsed refractory myeloma. As you know, in multiple myeloma, patients with newly diagnosed myeloma or who get frontline therapy have prolonged disease control. However, ultimately most of these patients will relapse, and with second and third relapses, we'll see shorter and shorter durations of progression-free survival and disease control. This is a common slide that we'll look at as a common approach to the treatment of relapsed refractory myeloma. We'll still think of patients with transplant-eligible patients. At time of relapse, if they had a prolonged disease control after the initial transplant, being eligible for a second or a salvage autologous stem cell transplant. We'll consider that for patients who had a prolonged disease control greater than 18 to 24 months of PFS benefit after the first transplant for a potential second transplant. Otherwise, other novel treatment options are also an important option for these patients. For patients who are transplant ineligible, at time of relapse, we can consider multiple options for these patients. Here, if we look at this slide, we'll see that historically, retreatment has been an important treatment option for patients. So for patients who had a disease control with their initial treatment option, we'll oftentimes consider retreatment as an option for these patients, or using other novel therapies as well. However, I think it's important to realize that these treatment paradigms are changing now. This is true in the face of historically when we had limited therapeutic options, when we still had bortezomib and lenalidomide only as our treatment options, and limited options, then clearly we had to consider retreatment as options. Retreatment is an important therapeutic option for patients. However, in today's day, with multiple new therapeutics and better therapeutics, retreatment, I think, is less and less an option for patients as we have better therapeutics available, as we'll review in the next few minutes. So what are the factors to consider in retreatment? Multiple options are considered here, including number one, what is the rate of progression? Are patients having CRAB criteria or end organ damage? Are you having a rapid proliferation with hypercalcemia, progressive renal disease, progressive renal dysfunction, cord compression, and what's the rate of progression that we see? Number two, what are the prior therapies that the patient has previously had? What was the depth and duration of their prior response? What are the side effects that they had to their prior therapy? And how long has it been since their last therapy for the treatment-free interval to consider treatment options? Finally, it's also important to consider the biology of the disease and what mutations have they acquired in terms of high-risk features that may have acquired as the disease progresses and may have changed from the time of initial diagnosis. And finally, other patient-related factors in terms of comorbidities associated with diabetes, hypertension, renal dysfunction, or cardiac dysfunction are all important factors in weighing treatment decision options. So I want to review over the next several minutes several phase three clinical trials, which really will help guide us in terms of how we manage optimally relapsed refractory myeloma and how we incorporate these novel therapies into our treatment paradigm. And the first study I want to review with you is the SPIRE study. And in this phase three study, patients were treated with an experimental arm with lenalidomide, dexamethasone, and carfilzomib versus lenalidomide and dexamethasone. This is a phase three study in relapsed refractory myeloma in patients with 1 to 3 lines of prior therapy. And what you see here is that patients who received either lenalidomide and dexamethasone or the combination of lenalidomide, dexamethasone, and carfilzomib. Importantly here, what you'll note as you look at this data, number one, is that carfilzomib was stopped after 18 months. So as opposed to continuing on treatment indefinitely until time of progression, which is how all the other phase three studies and how we practice myeloma now, in here we see that carfilzomib was stopped after 18 months. Number two, as we look at some of these data over the next several slides, we're going to focus predominantly on overall response rates and progression-free survival. Importantly, that's been really the mainstay of how we judge therapeutics and in terms of their efficacy. We'll look at their overall response rate and their PFS as a way of assessing their efficacy. However, in this novel age, as we start looking at various immunotherapeutic regimens, it's important to look at other options as well beyond the bottom line of ORR and PFS. So now it's important to start thinking about things like minimal residual disease and the depth of response. It's important to think about the durability of these responses and what's our long-term disease control with 3 and 4 year PFS. It's also very important to look at the Kaplan-Meier curves and the shape of these curves. When do you see the separation of the Kaplan-Meier progression-free survival curves? Do they come back together? I think this gives you really a global perspective on the efficacy of each one of these combinations and the activity of each one of these combinations. So with that in mind, looking beyond just OR and PFS is really one of the key points that we'll highlight here. So starting off with this SPIRE study, what you'll notice here is that there's a significant improvement in progression-free survival. And in fact, the progression-free survival benefit was 8 months, from 17.6 to 26 months. And this is the highest progression-free survival that we've ever seen in any relapse refractory trial. In fact, it's very comparable to what we see for newly diagnosed myeloma, highlighting the activity of carfilzomib, lenalidomide, and dexamethasone in combination. Importantly, this is despite stopping carfilzomib after 18 months, you'll still see a durable response and a benefit with patients having a progression-free survival of 26 months. On the bottom, you'll see here that patients with both high-risk as well as standard-risk disease benefit with an equivalent or similar improvement in progression-free survival by about 10 months. Here you see the overall response rate, and you'll see an improvement in the overall response rate from 66% to 87%, so an absolute increase of 20% with the addition of carfilzomib. And importantly, what you also notice here is a tripling in the complete response rate. You see a significant improvement in the depth of response from 9% to 31% with the addition of carfilzomib. And this is a very similar situation that we see with carfilzomib in multiple trials, where you see a significant improvement in the depth of response, especially in the newly diagnosed setting as well, where you see that the addition of carfilzomib leads to improvements in the complete response rate, as well as minimal residual disease. Importantly, there are some side effects to be aware of with carfilzomib. Oftentimes, we'll focus on cardiac issues that we'll see with carfilzomib, and though this is a small number of patients that we'll see, approximately 4% of patients will see cardiac or renal dysfunction, correction, with cardiac dysfunction. However, it's important to realize that most of these patients who develop a decrease in their ejection fraction, oftentimes, after several months, have a complete resolution of their symptoms and a recovery of their ejection fraction without a detriment in their quality of life. The other important side effect to be aware of is hypertension that we'll see in patients treated with carfilzomib. So 25 to 30% of patients will have hypertension as well as a transient shortness of breath. This is important for physicians to recognize, as well as nurses, healthcare providers, as well as the patients. Importantly, what you see with these hypertension as well as the shortness of breath is that patients will acclimate to this, and the shortness of breath will continue to improve over time. This can be managed both with supportive care as well as with diuresis. The second phase 3 trial I want to review with you is a Tourmaline study. And in this trial, it was a phase 3 study in relapsed refractory myeloma, again with patients with 1 to 3 lines of prior therapy. And in here, they compared lenalidomide and dexamethasone versus the experimental arm with lenalidomide, dexamethasone, and exazomib. And what you see here in the interim analysis is a 6-month improvement in progression-free survival from 14 months to 20 months. However, when you look at the final progression-free survival by investigator, there was an intention to treat basis. The progression-free survival was 2 months. Importantly, also when you look at the progression-free survival, as you look at the Kaplan-Meier curves here, in fact, you'll see that the progression-free survival starts to separate at a later time point at 9 months, as opposed to an early separation that we'll typically see in most phase 3 studies with a 3-drug versus a 2-drug combination. Importantly, when you look at overall survival, though this is an early first interim analysis, there was no difference in overall survival with the 3-drug versus the 2-drug combination. And finally, when you look at the FDA statistical review, looking at progression-free survival by prior therapies, interestingly, note here, in patients with 1 line of prior therapy, there was no benefit in progression-free survival. However, in patients with 2 or 3 lines of prior therapy, in this subset analysis, with all the caveats with a subset analysis, you'll see a significant benefit in progression-free survival in this subset of patients. Here, you'll see the response rates with the addition of exazomib to lenalidomide and dexamethasone. Importantly, you'll see a 6% improvement in their overall response rate, and also an improvement in the complete remission rate from 6% to 12%. As we move forward now, several other therapeutics have also been approved in relapsed refractory myeloma beyond our carfilzomib and oral exazomib, or an oral proteasome inhibitor. and these include various monoclonal antibodies. When we look at monoclonal antibody-based therapy, it's very exciting. There's multiple mechanisms of action that we see, including antibody-dependent cellular cytotoxicity, complement-dependent cytotoxicity, as well as drug ADC. The next trial I'd like to review with you is the ELOQUENT 2 study, which is a phase 3 trial of lenalidomide dexamethasone plus or minus elotuzumab in patients with relapsed refractory myeloma. Elotuzumab is a monoclonal antibody that targets SLAMF7. SLAMF7 is ubiquitously expressed on plasma cells and myeloma cells, as well as NK cells. Elotuzumab works both directly through ADCC and CDC, which typically monoclonal antibodies are functioned through. However, it has a dual mechanism of action that we see, which is very exciting with elotuzumab. Importantly, in addition to the ADCC and the CDC that we'll see with typical monoclonal antibodies, we'll also see an immunostimulatory component to elotuzumab. Because we see SLAMF7 expression on NK cells, elotuzumab in fact activates NK cells or natural killer cells, and then with this immunostimulatory component directly leads to cell death of plasma cells as well. So because of this dual mechanism of action that we see with elotuzumab, both with the SLAMF7 expression on plasma cells as well as NK cells, and the direct cell death of plasma cells as well as the immunostimulatory component, it's a very exciting immunotherapeutics in myeloma. The next therapy I want to review with you that's approved in the relapsed refractory myeloma setting is daratumumab. Daratumumab is another monoclonal antibody that's also approved for patients with relapsed refractory myeloma. Daratumumab targets CD38, and CD38 is also ubiquitously expressed on plasma cells. Daratumumab was approved based on the CIRRUS trial, which is a single-arm phase 2 study. Patients with relapsed refractory myeloma with greater than 3 lines of prior therapy, including a prior proteasome inhibitor and an IMID, or refractory to their most recent proteasome inhibitor and IMID. Here, 106 patients are treated. What you'll see here is an overall response rate of 29% in these patients with heavily pretreated myeloma, with a stringent CR of 3%, a median progression-free survival of 3.7 months, and a 65% one-year overall survival. The most common side effects that we were seeing with daratumumab are infusion-related reactions, though we can see some cytopenias or thrombocytopenia, anemia, and neutropenia in this single-arm study. The most common side effect to be aware of as practicing physicians is infusion-related reactions, which is seen in approximately 40% of patients, though most were grade 1 and grade 2. Infusion-related reactions can be seen and need to be appropriately managed, similar to other monoclonal antibodies, including drugs like Rituxan that we have previous experience with. Importantly, daratumumab can also be safely combined with other backbone therapies, including lenalidomide and dexamethasone. So this is a phase 1-2 trial where they combined daratumumab, lenalidomide, and dexamethasone in relapsed refractory myeloma. And what you see here is an expansion cohort, a very high overall response rate of 86%. And as you see that patients stay on longer therapy, and as these patients get on to beyond 6 cycles of therapy, there's also a significant improvement in their depth of response with a VGPR rate of 64% for patients who stay on for more than 6 cycles of therapy. Importantly, the combination of daratumumab, lenalidomide, and dexamethasone is also very safe. And what you'll see here, again, the most common side effects or adverse events that you'll notice here is pneumonia, neutropenia, and diarrhea. However, importantly, notice that 19 of the 45 patients also had an infusion-related reaction. Again, most of these were grade 1 and grade 2. These occurred in cycle 1 of therapy with their first infusions, and as the patient acclimated, these infusion reactions also diminished with time. Importantly, daratumumab can also be combined with multiple other therapies, and you'll see here from the French experience where they combined daratumumab with both bortezomib and dexamethasone, the combination of bortezomib melphalan and dexamethasone, bortezomib thalidomide and dexamethasone, as well as pomalidomide and dexamethasone, that daratumumab can be safely combined with all these various therapeutics. And in this very early study with minimal number of patients, you'll see a very nice high response rate in all these different combinations. Again, highlighting that daratumumab can be safely combined with multiple different therapeutics. In this phase 1 study, daratumumab was also combined with pomalidomide and dexamethasone. And here in this phase 1b study that's ongoing in relapsed refractory myeloma with patients with greater than 2 lines of prior therapy, including prior lenalidomide and dexamethasone, what you'll see here, an overall response rate of 58%. Again, the most common reactions that we're seeing were infusion-related reactions, as we've seen in our previous daratumumab studies. So in conclusion, when we look at all these therapeutic options in relapsed refractory myeloma, how do we put all this together? There are multiple three-drug options that we have, including carfilzomib, lenalidomide, and dexamethasone, elotuzumab, lenalidomide, and dexamethasone, as well as our oral proteasome inhibitor, ixazomib, lenalidomide, and dexamethasone. With all the usual caveats of comparing across phase three studies, we'll see the highest overall response rate and longest progression-free survival with carfilzomib, lenalidomide, and dexamethasone in the relapsed refractory setting. Importantly, ENDEAVOR, I think, is the most important practice-changing study with a first head-to-head comparison in myeloma, comparing directly carfilzomib to bortezomib. And what you see here is a doubling of the complete remission rate, a doubling of the progression-free survival, and the duration of response with carfilzomib compared to bortezomib. I think this is really an important practice-changing event where now we've established the superiority of carfilzomib as really the proteasome inhibitor of choice. Importantly, when you're using carfilzomib, key is to infuse carfilzomib over 30 minutes and not a 10-minute bolus infusion. I think that's important to the safe administration of carfilzomib. However, when you think about all these therapeutic options, it can be quite challenging, so it's always important in my mind to understanding how to use these regimens is to focus on the underlying myeloma and oncologic principles that have been proven time and time again. Now, number one is that the depth of response matters, and that our goal of therapy now is to get patients into the complete remission as well as minimal residual disease. And those therapies that can lead us to a complete remission are important options for patients. Number two, use our best drugs and use them early. Don't wait to use our best drugs at salvage or a later time. Though historically in myeloma, we've thought about retreatment or using therapies again or waiting to use our best drugs later in terms of salvage options, we've clearly shown that using our best drugs early is an important therapeutic principle to use in myeloma. Finally, panobinostat has a robust data in patients with two or greater lines of prior therapy, including bortezomib and an IMiD, with an improvement in progression-free survival from 4.7 to 12.5 months. The better partner drug, in fact, may be with carfilzomib or IMiDs or sub-Q bortezomib. I think this is another important therapy to also consider in our patients with relapsed refractory myeloma. Finally, it's important to differentiate our two monoclonal antibodies. Elotuzumab targets SLAMF7, which is expressed both on plasma cells as well as NK cells, and has an immunostimulatory component to it as well. Daratumumab targets CD38, which is also ubiquitously expressed on plasma cells. It's a very nice single-agent activity and is able to be combined very nicely with multiple therapeutics. And we'll see some very nice phase three data now from daratumumab to be seen at both at ASCO and EHA in 2016. However, it's important to realize that both these monoclonal antibodies are very different. They work in different targets and have a different mechanism of action that we can see. So in conclusion, there are multiple therapeutic options available to our patients. We have our class of drugs with proteasome inhibitors, with bortezomib, carfilzomib, and ixazomib. We have our immunomodulatory drugs with lenalidomide and pomalidomide. We have our new class of drugs with HDAC inhibitors with panobinostat, monoclonal antibodies with elotuzumab and daratumumab, as well as our standard alkylating-based therapy, as well as steroids. These are all important therapeutic options for our patients, and hopefully this is helpful in understanding how we can combine these options and use these options best for our myeloma patients. Thank you.